Hello, hello, hello. Here's Marlenka again with another episode. And in general, it's about the integral yoga of Sri Aurobindo. And I have been reading Essays, Divine and Human. But I would like to read something else today. Selected letters of Sri Aurobindo compiled by the Sri Aurobindo Ashram are replies to letters written by disciples, and he addresses them according to subject. And this one is about sadhana through love and devotion, divine love, universal love, and psychic love. To bring the divine love and beauty and Ananda into the world is, indeed, the whole crown and essence of our yoga. But it has always seemed to me impossible, unless there comes, as its support and foundation and guard, the divine truth, what I call the supramental, and its divine power. Otherwise, love itself, blinded by the confusions of this present consciousness, may stumble in its human receptacles, and even otherwise may find itself unrecognized, rejected, or rapidly degenerating and lost in the frailty of man's inferior nature. But when it comes in the divine truth and power, divine love descends first as something transcendent and universal, and out of that transcendence and universality, it applies itself to persons according to the divine truth and will, creating a vaster, greater, pure personal love than any the human mind or heart can now imagine. It's when one has felt this descent that one can be really an instrument for the birth and action of the divine love in the world. Now, the divine love may not be able yet to manifest on the physical plane, humanity being what it is, as fully and freely as it would otherwise do. But that does not make it less close or intense than the human. It is there waiting to be understood and accepted, and meanwhile giving all the help you can receive to raise and widen you into the consciousness in which it will be no longer possible for difficulties and misunderstandings to recur, the state in which there is possible the full and perfect union. The love that belongs to the spiritual planes is of a different kind. The psychic has its more personal power and love. Bhakti, surrender. Love in the higher or spiritual mind is more universal and impersonal. The two must go together to make the highest divine love. Psychic love is pure and full of self-giving without egoistic demands, but it is human and can err and suffer. Divine love is something much vaster and deeper and full of light and Ananda. Universal love is the spiritual founded on the sense of the One and the Divine everywhere, and the change of the personal into a wide universal consciousness, free from attachment and ignorance. And cosmic love depends on the realization of oneself, the oneness of oneself with all. Psychic love or feeling for all can exist without this realization. Bhakti. There is always the personal and the impersonal side of the divine and the truth, and it's a mistake to think the impersonal alone to be true or important, for that would lead to a void in completeness in part of the being, while only one side is given satisfaction. Impersonality belongs to the intellectual mind and the static self, personality to the soul and heart and dynamic being. And those who disregard the personal divine ignore something which is profound and essential. In following the heart, in its purer impulses, one follows something that is at least as precious as the mind's loyalty to its own conception of what the truth may be. Now, the nature of bhakti is adoration, worship, self-offering to what is greater than oneself. The nature of love is a feeling or a seeking for closeness and union. Self-giving is the character of both. Both are necessary in the yoga, and each gets its full force when supported by the other. Now, bhakti is not an experience. It is a state of the heart and soul. It is a state which comes when the psychic being is awake and prominent. The ordinary bhakta is not a lion heart. The lion heart gets experiences comparatively soon, but the ordinary bhakta has often to feed on his own love or yearning for years and years, and he does it. Your wholehearted acceptance of the Vaishnava idea and bhakti becomes rather bewildering when it is coupled with an insistence that love cannot be given to the divine until one has experience of the divine. For what is more common in the Vaishnava attitude than the joy of bhakti for its own sake? Give me bhakti, it cries, whatever else you may keep from me. Even if it is long before I can meet you, even if you delay to manifest yourself, let my bhakti, my seeking for you, my cry, my love, my adoration, be always there. How constantly the bhakti has sung. All my life I have been seeking you, and still you are not there. But still I seek and cannot cease to seek and love and adore. If it were really impossible to love God unless you first experience him, how could this be? In fact, your mind seems to be putting the cart before the horse. One seeks after God first with persistence or with passion. One finds him afterwards, some sooner than others, but most after a long seeking. One does not find him first, then seek after him. Even a glimpse often comes only after long or fervent seeking. One has the love of God, or at any rate some heart's desire for him, and afterwards one becomes aware of God's love, its reply to the heart's desire, its response of the supreme joy and ananda. One does not say to God, show your love from the first, shower on me the experience of yourself, satisfy my demand, then I will see whether I can love you so long as you deserve it. It is surely the seeker who must seek and love first. Follow the quest. Become impassioned for the sought. Then only does the veil move aside, and the light appear, and the face manifest that alone can satisfy the soul after its long sojourn in the desert. Then again, one may say, yes, but whether I love or not, I want. I have always wanted, and now I want more and more, but I get nothing. Yes, but wanting is not all. As you now may begin to see, there are conditions that have to be met, like the purification of the heart. Your thesis was, once I want God, God must manifest to me, come to me, at least give glimpses of himself to me, the real, solid, concrete experience, not mere vague things which I can't understand or value. God's grace must answer my call, whether I yet deserve it or not, or else there is no grace. God's grace may indeed do that in certain cases, but where does the must come in? If God must do it, it is no longer God's grace, but God's duty, or an obligation, or a contract, or a treaty. The divine looks into the heart and removes the veil at the moment which he knows to be the right moment to do it. You have laid stress on the bhakti theory that one has only to call his name and he must reply. He must at once be there. Perhaps. But for whom is this true? For a certain kind of bhakta, surely, who feels the power of the name, who has the passion of the name and puts it into his cry. If one is like that, then there may be immediate reply. If not, one has to become like that. Then there will be the reply. But some go on using the name for years before there's any answer. Ramakrishna himself got it after a few months. But what months? And what a condition he had to pass through before he got it. Still, he succeeded quickly because he had a pure heart already and that divine passion in it. It's not surely the bhakta, but the man of knowledge who demands experience first. He can say, "How can I know without experience?" But he too goes on seeking like Totapuri, even though for 30 years striving for the decisive realization. It's really the man of intellect, the rationalist, who says, "Let God, if he exists, prove himself to me first. Then I will believe. Then I will make some serious and prolonged effort to explore him and see what he is like." All this does not mean that experience is irrelevant to sadhana. I certainly cannot have said such a stupid thing. What I have said is that the love and seeking of the divine can be, and ordinarily is there, before experience comes. It is an instinct, an inherent longing in the soul, and it comes up soon as certain coverings of the soul disappear or begin to disappear. The next thing I've said is that it is better to get the nature ready first, the purified heart and all that, before the experiences begin, rather than the other way round. And I base that on the many cases there have been of the danger of experiences before the heart and vital are ready for the true experience. Of course, in many cases, there is a true experience first, a touch of the grace. But it is not something that lasts and is always there, but rather something that touches and withdraws and waits for the nature to get ready. But this is not in every case, not even in the majority of cases, I believe. One has to begin with the soul's inherent longing, then the struggle with the nature to get the temple ready, then the unveiling of the image, the permanent presence in the sanctuary. Divine love, unlike human, is deep and vast and silent. One must become quiet and wide to be aware of it and reply to it. He must make it his whole object to be surrendered so that he may become a vessel, an instrument, leaving it to the divine wisdom and love to fill him with what is needed. Let him also fix this in the mind, not to insist that in a given time he must progress, develop, get realization. Whatever time it takes, he must be prepared to wait, persevere, and make his whole life an aspiration and an opening for the one thing only, the divine. To give oneself is the secret of the sadhana, not to demand and acquire. The more one gives oneself, the more the power to receive will grow. But for that, all impatience and revolt must go. All suggestions of not getting, not being helped, not being loved, going away, abandoning life, or the spiritual endeavor must be rejected. So we're going to close on that note for today, and we will continue in the next episode next week. We're very happy you tuned in and had a few minutes to listen. Blessings.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.